We have just read together a parable from Luke chapter 14. And as so often is the case, the parables reflect upon a much deeper issue. It's not just about an interesting story. Sometimes we watch a story on television, we think that was a nice story. That's an interesting little story. I like that. But the parables are more than just stories. They're stories meant to teach a deeper, more fundamental message and lesson about life, and especially about the kingdom. And as was the case with the master in the story, so is the case with our Lord. He has been inviting, he has been instructing, he has been directing, and so many have been, instead of coming and answering yes, instead of answering here am I, send me, instead of all of that, we have perhaps been making excuses. They all began with one accord to make excuses. And as you read through the list of these three excuses given, none of them make much sense in terms of what was really important. And so angry was the master at hearing these excuses and having these rebuff the invitation that he sent his servants out to take notice of the highways and byways and get the blind, the lame, and at the last bring everybody who possibly could come in into the kingdom. And of course, in the time of Jesus' life, his own people, his own nation, his own family all turned against him. He had invited them. He was doing his best to instruct them, and yet they turned against him. And so to whom did the gospel go? Well, as time went forward, the Gentiles. We are Gentiles. The Gentiles accepted the gospel. They came into the kingdom. And when all is said and done, after all these centuries have come and gone, it is wonderful to think about the fact that the gospel is for all and the invitation is to everybody. But the principles here are still in place today, that so many that should respond, that should obey, have in replace of their decision to do the right thing, they are instead making excuses for doing the wrong thing. Jesus makes it very clear that's something that makes the Lord angry. The Bible tells us that Christ is interested in inviting, helping, encouraging, and directing all of us. Remember his words in Matthew chapter 11, the end of that chapter, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest to your souls, for my yoke is easy, my burden is light." We can imagine in our mind's eye his outstretched arms saying those wonderful words, "Come unto me." And yet, as had been the case with only prophets before, like Jeremiah or Isaiah, they had heard the words but hadn't heeded them. When Jeremiah had said that those of his generation should seek the old paths and walk in them, they said, "We will not." And so many of Jesus' day, when they heard the words, "Come unto me," they had one excuse after another why they couldn't, why they wouldn't, why they shouldn't, and so they didn't. And today, the same is true. And also, those who are his disciples, who've made that one-time decision for, it seems, a short time, now realizing there's something expected of them, again, excuses come. You might remember that Jesus also said in Matthew 16, "If any man come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And whosoever shall save his life shall lose it, but whoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" Just as Christ invites the lost to come to him, he invites those who have come to him to be all in, to be faithful to him, to give their best to the Lord. that. You remember that parable Jesus tells in Matthew 25 that speaks to this, where you've got the master giving his stewards, his servants, various amounts of talents. The one with five, the one with two, the one with one. He leaves, comes back, the one with five's doubled it. The one with two has doubled it. The one with one has buried his talent in the ground. And when the master comes back, all that servant offers is excuses. Well, I know you're a hard man. I know that you work in the work of others and have their proceeds as your own. I realize that, and because knowing the kind of man you were, I just dug a hole and buried my talent. Whether it's coming to Christ for the first time or being faithful to Him over time, it seems so many, should I say so many of us sometimes, are better at making excuses than we are in making a faithful life to the Lord. And when it comes to excuses, there is no good excuse for doing a bad thing or failing to do a right thing. An excuse is different than a rationale or reasoning. An excuse is just an excuse. You've heard the old story about the man that had a neighbor that kept borrowing tools from him and never gave them back. And so the man came over and asked for an axe, and the man said, "I can't give you my axe." He said, "Why can't you?" "Because I'm having soup tonight." And the man said, "Well, what does having soup have to do with the axe?" He says, "Nothing, but when you don't want to do something, one excuse is just as good as another." Well, that's sometimes the way it is in church life. One excuse seems about as flimsy, as feeble as another. I remember hearing years ago a lady who was a straight face said the reason she couldn't come to worship services is because, she said, "I'm in an unusual predicament." And I said, "Well, what is it?" "Well, I live too far away from the church building to walk, but I'm a little too close to drive." Just that sweet spot of, I just can't get there. Well, sometimes our excuses are about that lame. Now, I'm going to talk about people that aren't you, and then I'm going to talk about all of us. Sometimes we can say, yes, that's what's wrong with the world. They hear the gospel and they don't have an interest in obeying it. They have the seed of the word planted in their minds, and they, like the wayside soil, just rebuff it, or like the shallow, stony ground, they are soon to dispense with it. Like the thorny ground, they are overcome with thorns and it chokes their life out. They're not stickers, they're not doers, they're not faithful. That's what's wrong with the world. And it's true. In Acts 26, Felix trembled, but he said, "I'll hear you when it's a more convenient season." It seems that season never came. In Acts 28, Agrippa heard the word and said, "Almost you persuade me to be a Christian, but not quite." He wasn't all the way there, all the way in. And like them, so many today, they will not obey the gospel because, oh, so many excuses. "Well, I don't want to make my parents or grandparents who are already dead now, I don't want to make them seem like they're lost by me obeying the gospel." As if your decision has anything to do with what happened to them. "Or I would obey the gospel, but now is just not a good time. It's just when I get my ducks in a row, when everything is lined up, when life gets in a better place." But oftentimes that time never comes. "Or I'd obey the gospel, but I just am afraid that I might fail. I'm afraid it wouldn't work for me. I'm afraid I've gone too far. I'm afraid there's no coming back for me." Well, ask those in Pentecost who were guilty of killing Christ. They were given a way back. Ask Saul of Tarsus, who persecuted Christians. There's a way back for him. You're never so far lost, you can't come back. But all of these are just excuses for not doing what we know should be done. Obeying the gospel. Being washed in the blood of the Lamb. Beginning a new life as a new creature. All of this should be our life. Should be everybody's lives, but one excuse is about as good or as bad as another. But that's them. I'm talking about us, those of us who are Christians, who are encouraged and directed to offer our bodies as living sacrifices, Romans 12. Who are encouraged to think those things which are above, where Christ sits on the right hand of the throne of God, in Colossians chapter 3. That are told to be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. As much as you know, your labor is not in vain in the Lord. The last verse of 1 Corinthians 15. Or like Revelation 2:10 says, be faithful unto death. And we know what it means to be faithful. In a relationship, in business, in a marriage, in church life, we know what it means to be faithful. And so it's not like we don't know what the Lord expects of us. We need to be like Him in living our Christian lives. We need to be faithful in being part of services like this one. That's not the be-all and end-all of Christian life, but it is a vital, integral part of being a Christian. We need to spend time in His Word, in study, in reading, and in loving what He has to say to us. Spend special time, much frequent time, in prayer, giving our concerns and appreciation to the Lord. We should be kind to one another and kind to those we barely know. We should be good to those we know best and good to those we know least. We should be like Christ in all respects because we wear His name, don't we? We are saints set apart. We are Christians wearing His name. We are disciples following His example. We are His body. He is the head directing our activities by authority and control. We should be living like Him in everything we do. And yet, well, we have all kinds of excuses for not. And again, one is about as good as another. And like the excuses for not becoming a Christian at all, sometimes these excuses are along the same lines. Well, I'm just not quite there in my life yet. When things line up, when things calm down, when my schedule clears out, then perhaps I can really focus on spiritual things. I can seek first the kingdom, as Jesus said in Matthew 6:33. I can finally pull my foot off the accelerator of my business and start living for the Lord, as if we can't balance that all the way. But that's just an excuse. Ever read that interesting passage in Matthew chapter 8 where Christ hears from one of His followers, I need to go bury my father first. And you might have thought when Jesus responds, let the dead bury their dead, that's kind of a harsh and curt thing for Jesus to say. I mean, here's a man, and from our perspective today, from our language and understanding, his father's passed away. He just wants to have the service. As soon as the service is over, he'll follow Jesus. But in the vernacular and time of that time, it's more likely what the man is saying is, I have an older parent, and when my life is in a better place, when I'm past that point, when I'm now without an older parent, then I'll serve you. I'll follow you then. And it's less a matter about that and more a matter of timing for this individual. And timing for all of us used as an excuse. It's kind of like, and I'm going to bring up something that I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't, but I'm going to. It's kind of like going on a diet. When's the best time for it? Well, I can't right now because, the holidays are coming. And it'd be silly to start something right now and the holidays come and ruin everything. And so I'll wait till after the holidays. After the holidays, well, it's not quite a good time yet because of whatever. And there's always a whatever. There's always a next week or next month or next season or next year or sometime. Excuses. I could care less about your diet. But I do care about all of our spiritual lives. And we start treating the work of the Lord that way. As soon as I get married, as soon as I have kids, as soon as they grow up, as soon as they leave home, as soon as, and before you know it, life is over. And we've been waiting to and putting off and procrastinating a lifetime away as excuse for not doing today what we should do today. And whether it's obeying the gospel to begin with or living a Christian life faithfully from then on, what should be done now. The Bible puts a premium not on yesterday, it's gone. Not on tomorrow, it may never come. It puts a premium on today. Behold, now is the accepted time. Today is the day of salvation. That's true. And one thing you'll notice in the New Testament about the book of Acts is those who were responsive to the gospel heard it, they accepted it, they embraced it, they obeyed it immediately, same hour of the night. It wasn't a long wait-and-see period, a long probationary period. They obeyed because there's no good time to do a wrong thing, but there is no wrong time to do what's right. And the same is true in the Bible with those who are faithful to the Lord. They don't put it off. They don't wait until. They do the best they can while they can, as long as they can while they're here. That's what Christian life looks like. You don't compare yourself to someone else. I can't do as well as they can, so I won't do anything at all. Or say, I failed in the past. Perhaps I started reading the Bible, but I quit last year, and so why even start this year? No, you stop with the excuses. Just do what you know you should do. And for some of us, it's no more complicated than just, I'm going to read my Bible. I'm going to spend time in prayer. I'm going to talk to my neighbor about the Lord. I'm going to be kind to people. I'm going to show up to church services. It's not that difficult. But the excuses start. I will when. Well, no, again, now is the accepted time. And so, my friend, if you're here this morning and not a Christian, don't put it off. And if you are, the good you know you should be doing, don't put it off. Do the best you can as long as you can with all you have to give. If you need to come, come now as together we stand and sing.